welcome to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. Glad to have you with us today. I hope you'll stick around for the full hour because we're going to get a rundown, a scorecard, and some analysis of the various things that are coming at federal workers, postal employees, and retired feds, and even in the contracting community, too. Couldn't have two better guests today, two people who know more about the horrible subject at hand, and that's Steve Watkins. He is editor of the Federal Times, and Steve Losey, a senior writer for the Federal Times, and they cover this stuff intensely, and I know you're familiar with federaltimes.com, both the print edition and online, and there's so much, guys, I don't know where to begin, but in the introduction, I don't know if you heard it, I have to do a 60-second introduction, and I said, the best thing that's happened to federal workers in this year, probably, is that the world did not end at 6 p.m. on May 21st, as predicted. Maybe it's uphill from here on out, maybe it's downhill from here on out, and I know you guys are getting the same kinds of emails we're getting here at Federal News Radio. People are angry, they're hurt, they're concerned about the information, and so many of them, understandably, can't keep track of what's going on. We got an email here from, and it's sad but funny, and he says, I'm a federal employee planning to retire December 31st this year. Is there anything looming on the horizon from Congress or OPM that would necessitate retiring sooner? Boom. Yeah. Yes. Actually, short answer, yes. Can you kind of give us a rundown as to, and it may take most of the full hour. What's out there? What's coming at federal workers? What's introduced? What are the process and what's next?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a lot of stuff coming down the pike, and it does look like federal employees are going to have to take some bite out of, you know, pay, benefits, or both, as part of these deficit reduction measures that are being talked about. You know, there's a bipartisan group of lawmakers that are talking to, that are meeting with the vice president to try to figure out some way to raise the debt ceiling. And one of the things they're sort of zeroing in on is this proposal to have FERS employees pay half the cost of their defined benefit pension. Right now they pay 0.8%. This proposal would make them pay 5.8%. It's a very steep cut. It would take an astounding bite, like we're talking several thousand dollars a year out of their paychecks. That's the I think for federal employees, that would be probably the most alarming proposal out there. There's a few others as well. There's a proposal to base their pensions on their five highest salaries instead of the current system, which is the average of the three highest salaries. That would also hurt their pensions, but not nearly as much, by my calculations, as equalizing the FERS contributions would.
Well, that first thing you mentioned, forcing people under the FERS system, not CSRS, but FERS, and as Steve Washington, I think you pointed out last time we talked, that's four out of five federal workers.
That's
so,
right.
Boom, it is a big hit. And some people write in, and they're technically correct. They say, this is not a pay cut. It is not a pay cut, but it is a reduction in take-home pay, which of 5%, which is the same thing to me.
You know, yeah, exactly.
You may be getting it on paper, and you may be paying taxes for it to the IRS, but you would be getting 5% less.
That's right. People who get that paycheck are going to see it as a pay cut, whatever you call it. The other thing I think that is particularly alarming about that particular proposal on the FERS contribution adjustment is that that could be the most near-term threat that feds are facing, and that's because that's a proposal that is being looked at very seriously in the context of the debt ceiling extension, and that's coming up at the very latest. August 2nd is the deadline. So that's something that Congress may well pass this year.
By the way, our number here is 202-465-3080. That's 202, Washington area code, 465-3080, if you want to give us a call. It's interesting you'd mention that because so many of the emails I'm getting are from people, and without getting political here, they're saying the right-wing people are doing this, the Tea Party are doing this. But as you point out, the most imminent threat and probably the most costly one is coming out. It's a bipartisan proposal, right?
Right, that's right. And this is being led by Vice President Joe Biden. There are Democrats and Republicans in the room. The Democrats probably are less excited about this than the Republicans, I would venture to guess. But it is something that appears to have gotten some bipartisan support. The other thing I would add on is, you know, a point that Steve made. This is the most highest impact proposal that I think is on the table at the moment. And he mentioned the high five idea, which we've talked about before on the show. It's been proposed in the president's deficit commission report. We looked at that. Certainly for some people, the impact could be higher, but generally, the impact of a high five pension would be pretty slight as compared to the pension contribution. And you can see that in basically the savings that are projected. The deficit commission projected that the high five idea would save roughly $500 million in 2015, just in a single year, whereas the pension contribution adjustment, that would save roughly $4 billion in a single year. So that really is the big monster of all the proposals out there.
Well, and as a couple of people emailed today and said, in fairness, we should point out that, you know, some people say they can't change the rules. Well, that's sorry, folks, they can change the rules. They make the laws. But they at one point within our lifetimes, I guess, it was a high five and it went to a high three. So it has been changed before.
Yeah, and we've had discussions with various members of Congress, Dennis Ross in particular, who his perspective and the perspective of others, and I would say particularly Republicans, is that moving to a high five makes sense. It's, you know, this and all these proposals are in the context of, you know, how do we deal with the deficit, and there's a real perspective amongst Republicans that feds are living large, that their pension benefits, their health care and their pay is outsized as compared to the rest of the country. Obviously, that's an arguable point, but that's basically what feds are up against.
The I've worked for two companies that had pension plans, including one that did not, which I think now is the majority. But both of those, the ones that had pension plans, we contributed nothing to it, to be fair. But on the other hand, it was this, our annuities were based, our pensions, they call them, were based on our highest five-year average salary. And they weren't very high, and they weren't COLA'd. They weren't indexed to inflation, which is a major factor in the federal retirement system. I mean, there's a lot of components to this, right?
That's right. And the point you make about how about the private sector defined benefit plans, that kind of tracks with the numbers I've seen. I've looked into the Labor Department statistics on these defined benefit plans like FERS. And one of the arguments that people sometimes make is, well, federal employees, they're putting in $1 for every 14 that the government is putting in. And they're saying that's way out of balance. That's way out of balance with what the private sector offers. That's not entirely accurate. When you do look at defined benefit plans in the private sector, you know, in the government, it's 1 to 14. In the private sector, it's 1 to every $109. It's very much skewed. However, it is true that these kinds of plans are on the way out. Over the last 30 years or so, the percentage of private sector workers with a defined benefit plan dropped from 28% to 3%. That is just a defined benefit plan.
In 20 years. It's amazing. Need to take a short break here. I'm talking with Steve Losey, Steve Watkins of the Federal Times. We'll be right back here on WFED 1500 AM.
Mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
The National Telecommunications and Information Administration is partnering with 9 federal agencies for a new online initiative designed to boost digital literacy among Americans. The new digitalliteracy.gov is designed to centralize resources for teaching computer and internet skills so they can be easily deployed to public libraries and other learning sites across the country. NTIA says the target audience is the 28% of Americans who currently don't use the Internet at all.
General Dynamics Information Technology is dedicated to providing the latest, highest quality information technology services and resources to help organizations meet their mission objectives. Large-scale IT systems and communications networks are the strategic and operational heart of defense, intelligence, civilian government, and private business. They require the expertise of a company that delivers results. General Dynamics Information Technology, information technology and professional services. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
Have you missed a key step in planning for your retirement? You may have. Studies show that at least 70% of people over age 65 will need long-term care services at some point in their lives. The Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program offers a smart way to help protect your lifestyle and remain independent should you need long-term care services someday. Now through June 24th, the FELTIP is holding its first open season for new applicants since 2002. Learn more about this opportunity at ltcfeds.com.
Tune in to Fed Central, dedicated to sharing insights and best practices on topics ranging from cybersecurity to sustainability to healthcare reform. Hear straight talk from government leaders and industry specialists on the issues that are shaping how agencies serve their mission and their constituents. Hosted by veteran broadcaster Jane Norris. Don't miss Fed Central on the 1st of June at 11:30 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. Sponsored by Deloitte.
From text messages to apps, games, and email, the mobile internet is becoming a bigger part of our lives every day. And whether we live in the city or on the open countryside, all Americans should benefit from mobile internet investment. That's why LightSquared is investing in the first nationwide wholesale-only 4G LTE mobile broadband network integrated with coast-to-coast satellite coverage. By partnering with wireless service providers, retailers, and device manufacturers, LightSquared is making seamless, ultra-fast mobile broadband a reality for every American. Send an email from the Grand Canyon. Download movies in minutes while on the go. Make calls hundreds of miles from the nearest cell tower. It's all possible with the LightSquared network. LightSquared, lighting the way to a wireless broadband revolution. Learn how LightSquared is creating jobs, encouraging innovation, and investing in vital American infrastructure at LightSquared.com.
With vacation time just around the corner, are you ready to go? Ackerman Security can help keep families like yours safe and secure. For just $18.95 a month, trust in the protection of Ackerman's nationally certified monitoring center. And switch your existing system to Ackerman at no cost and get a great $18.95 rate. Ackerman is the only company with a guaranteed response time. You want fast response, you want Ackerman. Get 3 months of monitoring free. Call 888-999-1070 or Ackerman. AckermanSecurity.com.
Do you want to know how to manage stress, do more with less, work well with your political boss, protect your professional liability? If you're a senior executive or an SES candidate, you can't afford to miss Managing Smarter, the Senior Executives Association annual conference. Join former Representative Tom Davis, political pundit Norm Ornstein, and other speakers on June 16th at the Grand Hyatt Washington. For a complete agenda and to register, visit the SEA website, www.seniorexecs.org.
Welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Cosney. We're glad to have you with us. And as a reminder, all of our shows are archived on our homepage, so this one will be up shortly after it ends today. So if you want to hear it again, if you missed a point, or more importantly, if you want to pass it on to a friend or a relative or somebody in the office, you can do that, and they can listen in the comfort of their home or your car, I guess, if you've got the right gadgets. Our telephone number here is 202-465-3080. That's 202-465-3080, and we've got a caller on the line. Is it Bob from Arlington? Bob, are you with us? Yes, sir.
Bill.
Thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
Yeah, it's Bill from Arlington.
Bill, yes, sir.
I had a question or a comment. From the way I understand, I'm actually a CSRS employee for 40-plus years, but if under the proposal, CSRS employees are going to be required to pay approximately 5% and have a reduction of their take-home pay. So don't FERS employees get a Social Security benefit in their computation? So they're not like FERS where we don't have Social Security. And since they were already paying into the Social Security system, it seems like there will be a disconnect between FERS employees and CSRS, because one group's going to get Social Security benefits plus their TSP plus their contributions from their defined benefit plan.
I'll let Steve Watkins and Steve Losey answer it. They're deeper into these weeds, I'm sure. But one of the things to remember is that when they set up this program in the 1980s, the people said that CSRS wasn't sustainable and that they wanted to make it more like a private sector retirement system. Government Accountability Office, then the GAO, did a study some years back, and it said that of all the people who sign up for the government, who come in as employees, only about 30% go a full career like you and retire. Vast majority do not make government a career, and they leave after 5, 10, 15, sometimes even 20 years, and they have nothing to take with them except their contributions. So the FERS system makes that portability, both with the 401k plan and with the Social Security component. And also the other thing to remember, and it's funny, both groups think the other guy's got it better. CSRS people envy FERS and their 5% matching government contribution to the TSP. The FERS people envy CSRS and its larger annuity. The FERS annuity is about one-half or less of what the CSRS annuity is, and the indexed inflation kicks in at age 62, not at the time of retirement. And it's a diet cola, meaning it's one percentage point less than the consumer price index after a certain level. But with that, what do you guys think about that?
Yeah, Bill, your point is absolutely correct. When FERS was established, the contributions were set up to be equal to that of CSRS. Most CSRS put in about 7%, and they divided up the FERS, so you'd put in 0.8% into your defined benefit and 6.2% into your Social Security, adds up to 7. It's the same contribution. And they would, if they bump it up to 5.8%, FERS employees would still have to pay that 6.2% into Social Security, which would throw the balance out of whack. Now, I've talked to some people who support making such a move, saying it doesn't need to be equalized anymore. The CSRS is closed. The numbers of CSRS employees are dwindling. It's not even an option. So the government doesn't need to make it equalized. But you're absolutely right. It would throw off the balance between CSRS contributions and FERS contributions.
I thank you on that. But then basically the FERS employees are going to actually have a couple benefits. They're going to have Social Security, and they're going to have also their defined benefit plan. So to me, it's disparity there. And I would have liked to have two retirement plans, but I'm not going to be able to claim Social Security. So thank you for explaining
that.
All right,
but good question. And the other thing, too, the FERS people will have that 5% government match. It's a tax-deferred pay raise, which is golden. I just looked. It's funny. I'm going to do a comparison. I got a friend in government, and I got his TSP account, and I compared it to my 401k, and it's frightening, the difference.
Yeah, it's quite good.
Yeah, okay, thank you, Bill. Number 202-465-3080. Hey, a question along that line. He's talking about the disparity, and if this goes through, if my math is correct, CSRS people will be paying, 7% to the Civil Service Retirement System and 1.2% for Medicare or some figure like that, and that's a minority of the people. The FERS people will be paying 6.2 and 5.8.
Yeah. Correct.
So that's 12 point whatever by my math. I just, in the back of my head, there's also talk of eliminating the federal annuity altogether for people hired in future. And I just wonder if they know what they're doing. If they don't know what they're doing, they don't know the risk is, or if this is very carefully calculated to, in effect, make government no longer a career path for people. Right now, the beauty of the government, the fringe benefits, but the retirement and the health insurance are the gem and the crown. If you raise the health insurance contributions dramatically, which there is talk of doing, we'll get into that, and if you eliminate the civil service benefit completely, instead of considering government as a career, you might come in for a couple of years, get some experience, make some contacts, punch your ticket, but definitely not retire from it, not make it a full career, which could be what some of these people, by that I mean the politicians, want, because it seems to me, and several of them have said they're not joining the federal health plan and they're not joining the federal retirement system. I guess it's optional with them. And what the statement they're making is, we're not lifers.
Right.
What do you think about that?
Well, I think you're exactly right that, you know, there is a risk here. And in fact, we addressed that in our editorial this week. Basically, the headline was quit singling out feds. And that's exactly what we seem to be seeing from the participants so far in the deficit reduction arena. Many of the proposals that we've been seeing are basically aimed at feds. What you talked about before, the idea of doing away with a FERS defined benefit pension altogether, that is out there. That's a bill that's been introduced already by Senator Tom Coburn. One of the participants, a recent member of the Gang of Six, now the Gang of Five, who's left those talks. But basically, I think you're exactly right that there are lawmakers out there, mostly on the Republican side, who don't have any problem with the idea of converting the federal career field into essentially something like the private sector, where people are not looking at federal employment as a career, and so I think in the end, you know, this may or may not come to pass, but I think you're right. The message in our editorial was, Congress, be careful what you're doing here, because there seems to be a real pile-on effect here that ultimately could not only crush morale within the federal ranks, but it could also really dampen recruitment in the out years, particularly as the economy gets better.
Well, and you know, I would add to that, if they take your warning, if they say, you know what, we're going to mess up government as a career, we're going to have, it'll be amateur night at the Bijou, we'll have people coming in, there won't be any institutional memory, but very little continuity, that could be terrible. Or they could say, that's exactly what we want to happen. We want, we destroy the village to save it and make the government more susceptible to contracting out.
Right, and I think there's a lot of people out there who say that seems to be what's going on, that there are lawmakers out there who just want to wreck government. And in fact, what this is going to do ultimately, if they really roll back the pay and benefits for federal employees, the federal government will still be able to hire. The question is, what's the quality of the people that they're going to be able to attract and bring on to their roles? And if you want government to employ the best and the brightest and people who could actually take on a lot of the complex challenges that this nation is facing, then you want the best and the brightest.
You know, it's intriguing, and I guess people, including people in the media, but people in the general public would say, okay, this guy works for Federal News Radio. These two guys work for the Federal Times. They're cheerleaders. This is their audience they're playing to, and we're pandering to them. But we're also real people and taxpayers. And it's amused me during these various comparisons of federal salaries with the private sector, with the national average, with a variety of things, that the most recent one came out and it reported something that was startling to me, is that the highest paid people in the government are doctors. Well, guess what?
Yeah.
Some of the highest paid people in the private sector are doctors.
You know? Surprise, surprise.
Surprise, surprise. Yeah, and lawyers were up there, and many of those were in mm-hmm. regulatory agencies that don't get taxpayer money, but they get money from their clients, the banks and that kind of thing. So, but the shock, the revelation was that doctors and lawyers make the most money in the government with almost no exceptions. And the fact is, the government is not very much like the private sector, is it?
It is and it isn't in some ways. There are comparable professions, but you're right. In terms of the programs and the scale and the complexity of the programs that it takes on, no, it's very unique. But we've argued as editorially, our voice at Federal Times, editorial voice, has very much advocated a revisiting of the pay plan for federal employees. Right now you have basically – one reason lawyers and doctors are getting paid so much is because they're on separate pay scales, and they have to be in order to attract people from the private sector to be competitive. But you have to do that across the board.
You can take a break, but I have my own comment about the doctor and lawyer thing when we come back right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Steve Watkins, Steve Losey from the Federal Times.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth every Saturday at 10 a.m. here on 1500 a.m. This week, my special guest will be Dean Catino of Monument Wealth Management. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin Feldman and Pittleman, a full-service law firm located in Fairfax, Virginia, serving the entire D.C. metro area. Check us out on the web at www.ofplaw.com.
Discover, connect, collaborate, secure. The i2 America's User Conference 2011 kicks off June 7th at the Crystal Gateway Marriott. i2 brings together top minds from defense, law enforcement, national security, and commercial sectors for 3 full days to help you accelerate your mission. Experience the latest innovations that have helped make our world safer for over 20 years. The i2 America's User Conference is the only place to share information and collaborate with hundreds of other i2 users. Register today at i2group.com. Attention employees of the intelligence community and Department of Defense. Right now, you could be eligible for affordable term life insurance from GEBA, the Government Employees Benefit Association, with coverage issued by Prudential. Learn more about this important benefit for government employees at GEBA.com or call 1-800-826-1126. Group term life coverage for GEBA is issued by the Prudential Insurance Company of America, 751 Broad Street, Newark, New Jersey, 07102, contract series 83500.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power and MetLife. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
If you're like most people, you have many financial questions like, can I afford to retire? How do I protect my nest egg? Will I outlive my money? Hi, I'm Mark Tabron. We'll tackle these questions and more every Saturday morning at 10:30. Learn how to protect and grow your money with me, Mark Tabron, on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Can't wait until Saturday? Call Tabron & Associates Financial Services at 301-773-3923.
Hear from keynote speakers General Colin Powell and Department of Homeland Security Undersecretary Rand Beers at the 2011 Symantec Government Symposium on June 14th. Join more than 1,000 government IT, security, and management pros to discuss challenges related to cybersecurity policy, the threat landscape, cloud, and mobile access. Register today at www.symantec.com/symposium. That's www.symantec.com/symposium.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit. Presented by NITP has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Airink.
Defense Secretary Robert Gates preparing the defense industry for a huge decline in spending. Fiscal concerns could cause the Pentagon to abandon some military missions and reduce the size of the armed forces. Gates, preparing to retire next month, in one of his last speeches, told the American Enterprise Institute the days of post-9/11 unchallenged defense spending are numbered. He said neither the money nor the political support are there. I'm J.J. Green.
A concern of every pilot is the weather and needing to know if the conditions are about to deteriorate either on the flight path or where the aircraft is landing. That's where Airink comes in. At the aircrew's request, Airink texts the latest weather information directly to the cockpit, thus providing pilots the information they need to decide whether to change routes or divert to another landing location. For more information and career opportunities, log on to ARINC.com.
Thanks, Mike Causey. Welcome back to Your Turn. Talking with Steve Watkins from the Federal Times and Steve Losey, senior writer for the Federal Times. And our number here is 202 202- 465-3080, 465-3080. And we're sort of doing a laundry list of some of the things that are facing federal workers and postal employees and retirees, and they're in various stages of threat alert. I guess if we were in the old days, some would be red alert, some would be blue or green alert. We talked about the very serious, and you guys think probably the most imminent and maybe the most serious threat, and that is the one being considered by the Vice President Biden's group, which is bipartisan. They're meeting at the Blair House, and they're talking about making people under the Federal Employees Retirement System, which is four out of every five current working feds, pay more, considerably more, for their retirement benefits. Mm-hmm. And that would work out to a 5% lifetime reduction in their pay, their take-home pay.
That's right.
So we have that coming. And also, during the break, you were talking about some other things that are coming down the road. Can you talk about what they are and where they are?
Sure. Well, one of the things that they're looking at also in the Biden discussion on the debt ceiling extension is to move from the current consumer price index metric as a gauge for cost of living adjustments to what they call a chained CPI, consumer price index. And basically, a chained CPI is a slightly different calculation, but basically, it would be a lower, it would result in a lower COLA. The difference would be slight in any given year, and the estimate is something like 1.1 percentage points of a difference between a chained CPI and the traditional CPI that's used to determine COLAs. So not a huge difference in the course of 1 year, but over a number of years, it'll add up through a cumulative adjustment.
But basically, compounding works in reverse,
exactly,
too,
right, exactly right. Now, the way the chained CPI, basically, it's just to explain, it's slightly that it considers something called a substitution bias, and what that means is, you know, if you have $1,000, you spend $100 a month on apples, suddenly the price of apples doubles. Your cost of living doesn't increase by that amount. Basically, this chain CPI is going to calculate the fact that most consumers are going to switch to something like oranges or peaches instead of apples. So that's the difference.
Yeah, okay. And well, and that applies to this proposal too, or maybe proposal is not a word, a concept of making people pay a higher percentage of their health insurance premiums. You know, right now, feds, I guess, on average, and it varies, pay about 30% of their health premium, and that's guaranteed. So each year when they go up overall, the government continues to pay the lion's share of roughly 70%. And this would whittle that down. And we had Dan Adcock on the show last week, and I believe he said that within 8 years, using that formula, they estimated that federal workers and retirees would be paying 20% more than they do now.
Yeah, the proposal that was floated as part of the White House Deficit Reduction Commission plan would transform the FEHBP program into sort of a voucher type system, where it would the amount that they receive to pay for their health insurance would only go up by a set amount, which would not keep pace with the rising costs of medical inflation. And medical costs are just going up and up and up, and this plan would most likely not keep pace. So, yeah, very quickly, federal employees would pay a lot more for their health insurance.
And yeah. I guess one of the sidebars of that, in addition to more out-of-pocket money for federal workers, and particularly hard on retirees who have not had a COLA, cost of living adjustment, for 2 years, feds who are not going to get a raise for 2 years. But one idea is, one thought is that this would drive people into less expensive and possibly not as comprehensive plans.
Yeah, exactly. So if they have a major medical issue, they get cancer, have diabetes or whatever, dialysis, they're going to go broke. And that's the upshot, is you're exactly right. And the fixed subsidy that Steve was talking about would be pegged at the gross domestic product plus 1%. And everyone knows that healthcare has been going up on a tear, you know, somewhere between 6, 7, 8% a year. So, you know, anyone can do the math.
Okay, anything else coming down the line? How about, it seems to me I've seen, maybe I think I saw in you guys, there was something about a reduction in a hiring freeze, you know, actually reducing the workforce, 150,000, 155,000 people, and a hiring freeze, which is could have major implications.
Yeah, it's kind of becoming accepted on the right that the federal workforce is too big, about 2.1 million people now, and among Republicans, it's not a question of should we cut the federal workforce. It's a question of how much should we cut the federal workforce and how quickly. Some of these bills that come out seem to be playing a bit of a game of limbo. How low can you go? One bill says, you know, we'll cut it by 10%. Another says 15%. Another says, one says we're only replace one for every two, another one for every three. The most the stiffest one a couple weeks ago was from Congressman Tom Marino, Republican from Pennsylvania, who introduced a bill that would not allow agencies to replace any positions when employees leave until the deficit is gone. And this would drastically reduce the federal workforce through attrition. So it's just the view on the right is hardening against federal hiring. Tomorrow, the House Federal Workforce Subcommittee is going to hold a hearing called Right-Sizing the Federal Workforce. And the witness list is interesting. You've got Congressman Marino, who I just mentioned, Congressman Cynthia Lummis from Wyoming, who has introduced her own bill to freeze federal hiring, and Andrew Biggs, who is at the American Enterprise Institute, who also supports cutting the federal workforce. So that's three. And there's one union representative, Bill Dugan, from the National Federation of Federal Employees. So it's three witnesses to one. Bill's a little bit outnumbered there.
Yeah,
but
the deck is stacked. Huh?
Yeah.
Well, you wonder about Capitol Hill, if what kind of an institutional memory it has, and is it Groundhog Day up there every day, or is it deja vu all over again? And I don't know even which decade it was, but Senator William Roth of Delaware, the late Senator Roth, the author of the Roth IRA, by the way, a statesman in that respect. But at one point he rammed through, I think he was chairman of the then Senate, I think it was called Post Office and Civil Service Committee, but it was strictly a committee to oversee the civil service and the postal service. And the unions were very strong in those days, and times were fairly good, and the unions got a lot of things. But Senator Roth got through a hiring freeze that was absolute, and they said this will cure things quickly. Well, within a matter of days, at his suggestion, they exempted the Defense Department. And then a few more days, and they exempted the Postal Service, and then the IRS, and the VA, of course, and Social Security. And it got down to where, I think at the end, the absolute freeze applied to maybe the American Battle Monuments Commission and the Marine Mammal Commission.
That's like a slow-motion government shutdown.
Yeah, it is. And the various constituencies, some of whom had demanded that they cut Leviathan, when they said, oh, no, not in my district, not the Defense Department. Don't you know, in those days, the Russians are lurking out there.
Right. And, you know, the problem all federal agencies are facing is that, you know, even though the economy is still on the skids, retirement levels are not what people were predicting because of that. But there's still something around 90,000 federal employees who are retiring every year. That's a lot of people with a lot of institutional knowledge. On one hand, it's an opportunity to, you know, bring in fresh blood and redesign the way agencies are going about things. But on the other hand, it's a big brain drain. And you need really the best and the brightest to come in, step up, and take over a lot of these programs that are dealing with very complex issues, whether it's disabled vets or, you know, problems with the economy.
The Postal Service, second largest federal operation, some call it an agency, not, they seem to be having a lot of trouble, and yet they're going to give pay raises, at least to their postal clerks. Let me ask you about that when we come back from break here on WFED 1500 AM.
Well, Listen next week for a special edition of the Business of Government Hours Conversation with Authors series, exploring ideas for improving government effectiveness. What is open government and how has the Open Government Directive sought to change the way government does business? Join host Michael Keegan as he discusses these questions and more with Professors Guanho Lee and Yonghun Kwa, authors of the recent IBM Center Report, An Open Government Implementation Model, Moving to Increased Public Engagement, next week on the Business of Government Hour.
For the first time in its amazing 100-year history, the 2011 Paris Air Show will be streaming live to your desktop from the Le Bourget runway. FLIR Systems and Flight Global are teaming to bring the largest international air show to audiences around the world. Aviation enthusiasts around the globe will be able to view today's fastest and most advanced aircraft from June 20th through June 23rd. Get closer. Get sharper. To see Paris your way, visit FLIR.com/Paris.
The Federal Drive is every weekday from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. Hear interviews, news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Amy Morris. The Federal Drive team will help give you the important information you need about the federal government and how it impacts your organization or agency. Tune in 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. or go to federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Drive is sponsored by CDWG. CDWG, the people who get it. Discover, connect, collaborate, secure. The I2 America's User Conference 2011 kicks off June 7th at the Crystal Gateway Marriott. I2 brings together top minds from defense, law enforcement, national security, and commercial sectors for 3 full days to help you accelerate your mission. Experience the latest innovations that have helped make our world safer for over 20 years. The I2 America's User Conference is the only place to share information and collaborate with hundreds of other I2 users. Register today at i2group.com. Attention employees of the intelligence community and Department of Defense. Right now, you could be eligible for affordable term life insurance from GEBA, the Government Employees Benefit Association, with coverage issued by Prudential. Learn more about this important benefit for government employees at GEBA.com or call 1-800-826-1126. Group term life coverage for GEBA is issued by the Prudential Insurance Company of America, 751 Broad Street, Newark, New Jersey, 07102, contract series 83500.
The Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program open season is here. Did you know that at least 70% of people over age 65 will need long-term care at some point in their lives? Long-term care services are expensive. You may need to rely on loved ones or pay for long-term care services out of your income or assets. Fortunately, the Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program was designed to help protect against the high cost of care. Open season ends on June 24th. Visit ltcfeds.com to learn more today.
From text messages to apps, games, and email, the mobile internet is becoming a bigger part of our lives every day. And whether we live in the city or on the open countryside, all Americans should benefit from mobile internet investment. That's why LightSquared is investing in the first nationwide wholesale-only 4G LTE mobile broadband network integrated with coast-to-coast satellite coverage. By partnering with wireless service providers, retailers, and device manufacturers, LightSquared is making seamless, ultra-fast mobile broadband a reality for every American. Send an email from the Grand Canyon. Download movies in minutes while on the go. Make calls hundreds of miles from the nearest cell tower. It's all possible with the LightSquared network. LightSquared, lighting the way to a wireless broadband revolution. Learn how LightSquared is creating jobs, encouraging innovation, and investing in vital American infrastructure at LightSquared.com.
The men and women of our National Guard and Reserve Forces are working hard on the battlefield and here at home. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve is working just as hard for them. For over 36 years, ESGR has paved the way for greater understanding between our Guard and Reserve Forces and their civilian employers, promoting a culture where all American employers support and honor the military service of their employees. Together, we all serve. To learn more, visit www.esgr.mil.
This is Mark Amtower. I've been advising contractors for almost 30 years, and when they need agency contacts, I always recommend Carroll's GovSearch. With over 350,000 contact listings and over 1,000 government organization charts, they help you find the people you need to reach in all levels of government. Give them a try. Get a free organization chart and a sample listing from their database. Contact Gordon Peel at 703-757-8228. Carroll Publishing, bringing government to you like no other.
Welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. I'm talking with Steve Watkins. He is editor of the Federal Times. Steve, they're regular contributors to this, along with Sean Riley. But today we wanted to get the most complete roundup possible, and there's just so many things, and I've learned a lot just in asking you guys questions. We get two major questions here. What are they doing to us? And where is it? Of course, where is it in the process? And do I have time to get out in the case of changing the high three to a high five system for figuring your retirement formula? And normally we would tell people in a thing like this, they tend to be prospective. So they would say effective January 3rd of 2012 or at some future date. But that's not chiseled in stone, is it?
No, you're right. And there are some things, you know, and I'll run through a list, but there's a caveat here, which is there's a number of things that could just come out of the woodwork. And we've talked about the high five idea. That's not in any legislation at the moment, but that could easily show up, for instance, as part of the deficit reduction talks or the 2012 budget talks. So a lot of things could creep in along the way. But, in terms of looking at the things that are out there that seem to have the best odds, I would start off with the pension contribution that we talked about, where FERS employees are going to contribute 5% more to their defined pension. The chain CPI that I mentioned before about adjusting the way COLAs are calculated, and again, that would overall end up as an average 1.1 percentage point decrease in terms of what the COLAs might be if they get pegged to that. Outside of that, we've got a few things that were in the Ryan bill that was passed by the full House that I think could easily get into the discussion. He proposed a five-year pay freeze. I think Democrats would resist that quite heartily, but we also saw the Deficit Commission, a bipartisan commission, come out with a three-year pay freeze. And, of course, we know that President Obama and Congress supported a two-year pay freeze. So I think there are some reasonable odds that could be extended at least a year. In addition, in the Ryan bill, he proposed a 10% workforce cut. That's about 200,000 positions. So I could see there. Most of the deficit reduction proposals we've seen have some sort of component there of a federal workforce cut. So I see something like that coming about, perhaps. There's a bill that is moving. It's passed a committee and will be before the full House by Congressman Chaffetz that would essentially result in firing federal employees who are significantly delinquent on their taxes. Also would prevent hiring of people who are seriously delinquent on taxes. And in addition, excuse me, there's a bill that has passed a committee by Congressman Ross, chairman of the Workforce Subcommittee, that would extend the probation period for new federal employees from 1 year to 2 years. Of course, the unions are very adamantly against that. And we'll see where that goes. But as I say, he's in a very powerful position, and it has passed a committee in the House. We've talked about a number of the other bills that are out there, a two-year furlough, some more radical hiring freeze-type bills. I think those are a little bit more on the periphery, as is the one that we talked about before by Senator Coburn that would do away entirely with the FERS pension.
Yeah, and with Senator Coburn was formerly of the Gang of Six. He is now the Gang of One, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
Lost his friends up there. I was interested in an interview you guys did a couple of weeks back with Congressman Ross and the fact that he's brand new. I guess his first term been in just a matter of a few months or a year. And yet he seemed so really knowledgeable about the system. Were you struck by that? Did he really sound that way, or did you make him sound good?
Steve, it's funny. We talked about it. Steve interviewed him almost immediately after the new Congress began, and he was named as the chairman. And he admitted at the time, Steve, correct me if that's not true, but he admitted, I don't know anything about this mm-hmm. federal stuff, pay and so forth. And he said, I have a big learning curve. We interviewed him 3 months later, and I was very impressed that he really had a solid grasp on most of the issues.
Yeah, for example, I asked him about the NSPS, the soon-to-be-defunct pay-for-performance system at the Defense Department, and he wasn't familiar with that. But as Steve said, when we talked to him a few months later, he was offering his opinions on, why he thought it didn't work and so on and so forth. So he's definitely been doing his homework on these issues. You know, you may not agree, people may not agree sure. with his conclusions, but he's certainly been learning a lot
yeah,
about the ins
and outs. Yeah, he knew the lingo, and I remember something came about National Security Personnel System, which is really inside baseball unless you're in the federal community, and he said, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to mm-hmm. do something else. But he seemed to know what it was and what he didn't want.
Yeah, and the other thing I would add is he is not a what I would say a right-wing radical by any stretch. He's a traditional free enterprise conservative. He definitely believes that the private sector is the way to go on most things, and looks at that as a model for reforming federal pay and so forth. So you can disagree with that, but that's where he comes from. He is a small business owner, or formerly a small business owner. A very sharp guy. But, you know, he told us, look, I'm not interested in redoing National Security Personnel System, as you mentioned. I'm not interested in trying to do away with collective bargaining in the federal sector, even though I personally don't agree with it. So he seems to be, picking his fights pretty well, I think.
We got about 2 minutes, and not as a sop here, but people are genuinely asking us, and I'm sure you, what can we do about this? And, you know, you always say, write your member of Congress and then hope they'll go away. Nowadays, I guess you want to email your member of Congress if you do it at all, because they take that mail out of Andrews Air Force Base and sanitize it and de-anthrax it. But is there anything that ordinary federal workers in Des Moines can do? Is there something a retiree in Fort Myer, Florida can do?
I would say talk to your neighbors. I mean, I think there's been a lot of anti-federal employee sentiment that's been sort of, you know, ginned up over the last year or so, and it's real easy to demonize people who are the big faceless other. And, you know, if you're a federal employee and you're concerned about people thinking that federal employees are lazy or overpaid or, you know, parasites, some use the term, talk to your neighbor. Say, this is what I do. And if my job, you know, I work at the VA, I work at the Postal Service. If my job went away, you know, the veterans who get blown up in Afghanistan wouldn't have anybody to treat their TBI. Put a human face on the federal employee, and I think, you know, bit by bit, we might see those public opinions shifting a little bit.
What about joining outfits, the AFGE, the NTEU, the Federal Managers Association, National Active Retired Federal Employees?
Yeah, certainly. I think, you know, obviously they are – it seems the only folks out there who are advocating for these, pay and benefits and essentially carrying the voice of the federal employees. I don't see really, it used to be we would see much more of a adamant sounds from folks like Steny Hoyer and others. They're still very friendly to federal employees because, you know, that's a big part of their constituencies in their districts. But I think the lawmakers are a bit subdued because there is so much pressure on cutting the deficit and there's so much popular support for cutting the deficit that I think they're afraid to come to the strong defense of federal.
You know, that's a really good point, because I noticed the other day one of these always pro-Fed workers, members of Congress with a huge constituency who normally would say, absolutely not, we're going to go to the trenches. And I think he was on the front page of the Federal Times as saying, we've got to look at these things.
Right.
So there's been a sea change in that.
No question. Yeah, the environment's shifted.
Yeah, okay. All right, well, gents, thank you very much for coming in. We're going to do this again. Remember, our show is archived on our webpage. Excuse me, it should be up pretty soon. You can listen to it again, and I think the threat assessment and the threat list you guys gave us is very useful. It's a little bit scary, but as they keep saying, this is not a drill. So
that's
thank
right.
you very much, Steve Watkins, Steve Losey. Look forward to seeing you next week.
Good to be here.